last week we began something of an abstract discussion about understanding all of the terms used to describe Hashem. I want to try this week to bring it a little bit more down, make it a little bit more understandable. So we're in Mamar Sheni, number Ois Beis. It's like a pretty long Ois. So I want to start with an example. The example that we brought up last week was the example of Chachma, right? The Khuzari said that all the different descriptions that we have about Hashem, I'll put it away. All the different descriptions that we had about Hashem are not really to be understood in the terms we're familiar with. Meaning, when we say that Hashem is wise, it doesn't mean wise in the sense that we know it. We just say it because it's the only term we can use. But it really means a lot more than that. So I just want to give an example of what this means. What this is supposed to mean.
No, I'll stand here.
Just give an example of what this means. We say somebody is wise. What does it mean that a person is wise? It means that there's an awful lot of wisdom out there, right? Whether it's scientific facts, that people who have encompassed them all. And there are people who figure out other secrets of this world, physics, secrets of human nature, philosophers who figure out deeper rules of the world. But these people are all discovering chachma that's out there. Now, a person might think that Hashem is the biggest chacham, and therefore, he knows it all. So in other words, whereas, let's say this philosopher, you have Aristotle, he only got so far, Hashem is even further than him. But that would be like saying he's basically, it's the same kind of chachma, just it's much more than anybody else. But that's not true. Because in Hashem's case, it's not that he knows all these things. Hashem is the inventor of chachma. Which means that Hashem, first of all, he made all this chachma. If he wanted, he could have made logic be exactly the opposite. He controls chachma, he encompasses all of chachma, and even more than that, he's not bound by chachma. Meaning at the end of the day, there's all kinds of rules and logic and things like that. Hashem is so great that he's not bound by it. I'll give a simple example. You have the famous question that the Kadmonim asked, how do we work out the seeming conflict of Yediyah and Bechira? You know that Hashem, on the one hand, two things that are very basic to our Emunah. On the one hand, Hashem knows everything that's going to happen. Right? On the other hand, we're told that we have free choice. Which means that I'm facing a certain situation, I either can choose yes or no. It's undecided. I can go either way. But Hashem knows what I'm going to do. If Hashem knows what I'm going to do, doesn't that mean that it's already set up what I'm going to do? Let's say Hashem knows that I'm going to do it. That means that I'm inevitably going to do it, no? Is it possible that I won't do it? How can you say that I have Bechira? If you say that Hashem knows the future, that means that the future is already laid down. How can you say that I have Bechira? That's a famous question which many of the Kadmonim struggle with, giving different answers. The answer that the Chovetz Chaim is basically what the Khuzari is trying to say here. The Chovetz Chaim says, you know what? You'll never know the answer to the question. But that's fine. It doesn't mean that the question has to bother you. Meaning as follows. The Rambam also kind of alludes to this. He says, what's the problem? Logically, the two don't work together. But Hashem is above logic. It's only in our world, it's only according to rules of logic that Hashem created that the two don't work together. It can't be that he knows what's going to be and yet you can choose otherwise. But that's in our world. The human mind has to work according to that logic. In the human mind, it can't be both together. But Hashem's above that. That's what you mean by Hashem is a chacham. Hashem is not bound. Hashem is not subject to the rules of logic that control us. That's what you mean. We're not talking about a chacham. For a chacham who knows everything, he still can't change the fact that if you know what's going to happen, that means that it can't be otherwise. But Hashem is not just chacham that he knows everything. All the rules of chachma are things that Hashem simply created and they don't affect him. By him, it's not a contradiction. He's in such a high place that, yes, the two don't have to conflict. How that could work, forget about it, but trying to understand. The human mind can't grasp that because Hashem did make rules of logic that we are stuck with. And we can never get to an understanding at which the two don't conflict. But fine. When we say that Hashem is a Chachma, it means that he's above all this Chachma. Well, this Chachma doesn't bind him. That's what we mean when we say, that Hashem's a Chacham, it's not like he knows all of our Chachma. We're talking about something of a completely different type, a completely different species. That's just one example. And now he says the same thing goes for life. When we say that Hashem is alive, we'll start again from here. What? You're asking a good question. Why do we try to understand Hashem and it's completely not understandable? The answer is that part of our avodah as Jews, and a very important part of our relationship with Hashem, is to be able to understand Hashem as much as we can. And an important part of understanding Hashem as much as we can is understanding how not understandable he is. And what I mean to say is as follows. That sounds funny, but what I mean to say is as follows. Given the example that we just gave, basically what we did is bring home how we can't understand. But at the same time, it raised Hashem in our minds to a level that beforehand we might not have comprehended. So by understanding what we can't understand, by really bringing it home, we are raising Hashem higher and higher. So it makes Hashem higher than we thought he was before. So therefore, yes. The truth is that this is a big part of what Kabbalah is all about. A big part of what Kabbalah is about is understanding higher and higher and higher worlds, and then yet understanding that Hashem is even further above that. So, yes, we understand that Hashem is very great. But the greater you understand the universe is, the greater you understand that Hashem is, even though you still don't know what he is. So therefore, yes, to understand what Hashem is not is an important part of understanding Hashem. Now he says the same thing goes with life. If we say that Hashem is alive, we don't mean alive in our way. Meaning, not our concept of life. We define life according to life that we're familiar with. Growth, organisms. But with Hashem, it's not any of those things. Really, when we say life, it's another way of saying we don't completely understand what he is. Okay, Eli. Oh, no, I'm in late. No, it's further. It's further. Now, really, we don't know what Hashem's existence is. Hashem's existence is not life. We're life. But Hashem's existence is not life. Hashem doesn't need life. He certainly exists. He's certainly conscious. But it's not our term of life. The expressions that we use when we say, he's a kel chai, he's a lekim chayim. Really, all we're doing when we say that is contrasting it with the other gods. Shem Elohim Nesim. The other gods are dead gods, meaning there's nothing to them. We know that Hashem, there is something to him. What is there to him, we don't know. But whereas they're just helpless, they can't do anything, they're helpless. They have no power. Hashem can do things, he can control. So we say, compared to them, he's alive Hashem. But what do we mean by live? We don't know. The same thing, when we say that he's one, what we mean to say is that there's no more than one Hashem. But it still doesn't mean one in the sense that we know. When we say something is one, we mean it's a defined unit. Right? There's one of something. It's a defined unit. Okay? Hashem is a completely different type of one. Meaning, for example, we say that fellow is one of a kind. Okay, he's one of a kind. There's nobody like him. So we say Hashem, we say there's nobody like him. It's in the same sense. When you say about a human being, there's nobody like him, you mean in a very specific way. Sure, there are a lot of people like him. He's got a stomach, other people have stomachs. He's got an arm, other people have arms. He's one in a certain sense. With Hashem, he's one in every last sense. There's nothing that anybody has, nothing that anything you can comprehend that's in common with Hashem. There's nothing you can relate to that you can attribute to Hashem. And therefore also it says, also, anyone that we know, anything that we know, is really a composition of parts. Meaning, let's say you'll have a person, he's the only person in the world. But he's not entirely one. Really, he's a lot. I'm a lot. What do I mean I'm a lot? I'm one person, but I comprise all kinds of different parts. I have a bunch of different limbs, a bunch of different materials that all come together to form one person, right? Just like you might say, I'm one person, but at the same time, this hand is one hand. That means that I'm not all that one anymore because I have two hands, right? You also might say, about water, this is one body of water. While amaisa, you can divide it into like you start taking one cup after the other, and all of a sudden it turns into 100 waters. Right? When you understand that Hashem is completely indivisible, and also that Hashem is not made up of different parts. Now, this sounds obvious to us that Hashem is not made up of different parts, but at the same time, to understand that on a deeper level is also something that we might not think of. Aver chadimim begufam istapik. We don't know of anything that is actually a unit, while at the same time it's not made up of components.
So you said that every human being,
how do we explain that? That's a good question. You know what? But I'm going to make your question even more difficult. Let's start like this. When we say that Hashem is one, we mean again, there's no different parts to Hashem. Hashem is all, whatever He is, it's all just the same. So therefore, let's say, for example, with us, I want to do something. I want to, let's say, go to the store and buy a piece of bread. Buy bread. Now, first, I have the thought, but that doesn't make it happen. Because the mind can think of things, but it can't do anything more than that. The mind will just stay on the table and not move, just the brain. So, therefore, the mind tells the legs to start walking. So it's the legs who are getting it done. That's so? Now the legs themselves couldn't have done anything because they wouldn't have thought of the idea to get bread. Legs don't need bread. They don't know why, they can't comprehend why somebody would want bread. Right? But they're doing the next stage. Then you get to the store, you need your hands to go into action. Then you come home, you put it into your mouth. There's a whole process. Why? Because the brain came up with a great idea. But now it's limited. That's it. Its capacity stopped there. It can't do anything further. Now the arms couldn't have thought of the idea in the first place, but they could do the next step of getting the bread off the shelf. Right? So you're made up of a bunch of different parts, each of which in and of itself is limited. Can't do much. And you need a bunch of different parts working together in order to get anything done. Yeah. Now with Hashem it's not like that. With Hashem there's no process. Hashem it's not like He decides to do something and then He does it. Because that would mean that the decision itself is only in the mind, which is limited, and Hashem needs a different part of Him to do it. He needs to decide in His mind and then do it with His arms. But Hashem doesn't work that way. The decision is what makes it happen. Because Hashem is just, Kibiyakul, if we'll call it, if we can associate Him with any part of what we're familiar with, Hashem is just mind. But that mind actually makes things happen. Now, when we say that Hashem is one, it also means that Hashem is infinite. Hashem is infinite, which means that Hashem is not limited by space in any way. Right? Let's also think a little bit about what that means. Hashem is not limited by anywhere, which means that Hashem is everywhere. Now what about in me? Am I Hashem? I'm not Hashem. But Hashem fills me? Everything that you're seeing about me is Hashem, or it's not Hashem? A person is not Hashem. Does that mean that Hashem is everywhere, but he stops short at this person, because this person is already something separate, he's not Hashem? Or any existence, any physical existence that's outside of Hashem, right? Does that mean that Hashem stops there? Hashem is everywhere, but not in this table, he's around this table? Or Hashem is filling the table too? So you might easily say, no, Hashem fills the table also. Or he fills me. Okay? Yes, Hashem fills the table. But what is it about me that's not Hashem? Hashem fills me up to my skin? Can you tell me what it is about me that's not Hashem? Is there anything about me that's not Hashem? Now I'm getting into a very tough question. Is there anything about me that's not Hashem? What will you answer? You're getting into trouble in either way. If you say, yes, there's something about me that's not Hashem, that means that you have said, yes, Hashem fills everything about me except whatever it is that isn't Hashem. You get what I'm saying? If you say that there's nothing about me that's not Hashem, that means that I'm Hashem. You can bow down to me. Chas v'shalom. This is a question that the Chaim Volozhiner really asks. It's a very tough problem. How do we understand any existence outside of Hashem? If we understand that Hashem is infinite, that means that he fills everything. There's no room for anything outside of him. How do we understand physical existence? Do I exist? Am I separate from Hashem? If I'm separate from Hashem, does that mean that Hashem is limited to outside of me?
Hashem doesn't go where there's, I don't know, tomorrow, or tomorrow, like she doesn't,
you, he runs away. Oh, you're getting, this is all part of the question, the truth is. So, could there be an area? Let's say there's an area of Tumah. Could there be an area where Hashem isn't? That means that Hashem is not infinite. You have just said that yes, Hashem fills everything except in this area. You know, this area is full of Tumah. This is a problem which the Kabbalim struggle with. The Chaim Volozhiner says that this is a serious riddle. It's a puzzle. Right? Even in a qualitative way. Is Hashem in my Bechira? But even Bechira is an entity. It might be an abstract entity, but even Bechira is an entity. Could that be something that exists outside of Hashem? It's a problem. Basically, the terms used to answer this question is that Kiviyachol, the Chaim Volozhiner says that this is the biggest pillar of the Bria, that Hashem created what we call Tzimtzum. It's a term used for this Tzimtzum. That Hashem Kiviyachol withdrew his existence and created space for other things to exist. Now, you know, put it the way the Shlub puts it, we know that everything was created Yesh Me'ayim, right? Everything was created from nothing, which means that before the world was created, there was nothing. Is that true? There wasn't nothing. There was no room for nothing. Everything was Hashem. The Shlub says first Hashem created Ayin. First he created nothing. That's a creation. Which was a big teller. The Kiviyachol, he made room for nothing, and then he made a Bria. Right? Now, ultimately, the Nevi'im Chaim says that the truth is that at the end of the day, Hashem still fills everything. Really, at the end of the day, Klapei Hashem, from his perspective, there really is nothing other than him. How we understand that? We're not supposed to. It's like we said before, there could be contradictions that just don't work for the human mind, but for Hashem, it works. And at the end of the day, as far as we're concerned, we do exist. And as far as we're concerned, we have to relate to Hashem in the right way. How Hashem sees things from his perspective is not our business. But when we're saying that Hashem is Echad, what we really need is all this. There's nothing limiting Hashem. Hashem is Pashut, what they call Achdus Pshuta. It's just uniform, everything. There's nothing outside of Hashem. Ultimately. Yet at the same time, Hashem told us we exist, so as far as we're concerned, we exist. But this is part of what we mean when we say that. When we say Hashem Echad, don't think of it in terms of one of a kind, right? There's a lot of people, and there's only one Hashem. It's a species that there's only one of. No. Hashem Echad means a lot more than that. He's Echad in every last sense. There is nothing else. There's only Hashem. So again, he's saying that when we use these terms, we're using them in the way we relate to them, not that we really understand them at all. We don't understand. The Rambam says, for example, that understanding Hashem Echad is one of the deepest concepts of this world, that basically a person could spend his whole life understanding deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. So, also, Hashem Echad is something we say without properly understanding. For us, what it means is, there's no two Hashems. Okay. But there's really so much more to it. So he says, "Va'etzam Elokim Eloimah Me'advikav Apriva." Really, Hashem is way above being composed of different parts, or even being separated from things. Again, Hashem is not limited, so there's nothing outside of Hashem. But we can't relate to all that. It doesn't work in our frame of reference. So therefore, V'noimah Echad Lishvor Haribui. As far as we're concerned, when we say one, we mean that he's not two. Very basic level of one, right? V'chein Rishon. We also say that Hashem was first. What does first mean in our terms? We can't comprehend something that always was. It must have started at some point. First means that it arrived first. So when we say Rishon, Lishloel Hayis Achris. It means, don't think that Hashem was created at some later point. It was always earlier. But how far earlier? We can't begin to comprehend it. That's why, for example, the Gemara in Chagiga says, it's one of the things a person should think about. Before the world was created, what went on? Right? What went on? There was just this huge void period of time, which goes back, I don't know, billions and billions of years. More than that. Infinite time, but there was just nothing. Where did it start? It didn't start. Hashem just always was. These are also things that the human mind just can't really grasp. We say he's Rishon, he's the first one on the scene. As far as we're concerned, he was here before all of us. He was here first. But what it really means that he's Rishon, that he always was, Hashem, is something that really the human mind doesn't grasp. We don't understand that. We don't know what we mean when we say Rishon. By the Kaim Layas Chalo, we don't mean to say that he started first. V'chein Achron, we also say that Hashem is Achron, he's going to be the last. Lishlo Mimeno Akilian, we mean to say that he's not going to end at some point. Le Kaim Layas Tichla, but it's certainly not as coming to define Hashem's existence. V'kalam Idai Sa'ele in Amzeikoi Shal Etzem Kroido, V'le Misrabe Bayam. All these different attributes that we attribute to Hashem are not defining his essence as far as we're concerned. We can't use any term that defines for us what Hashem says. Hashem is simply beyond any comprehension. He says, there are other things that we could more say that yes, they are more directly connected to Hashem, but again, that's only because they don't really describe Hashem himself. For example, there are certain things that we connect more to the Shem HaMafayrish. The Shem HaMafayrish, Shitke Bavke, he said earlier, is as close as we get to actually Kiviyochol defining what Hashem is. Even that is not quite, because even when we'll be at such a level of Kabbalah that we'll fully understand what Yudke Bavke means, it still doesn't define what the Mekubalim call Atzmusa Yisbarach, his actual essence, which is already just beyond any Kabbalistic talk even. So, Kimayotze Or Uvari Choshe, Voisen if Lois Gedolus of Adar. We say that he creates light, he creates darkness, he does all kinds of wonders by himself. But Salema Bigzerose Vechetze Mibli Mitzua Siba Acheres. What we mean there is something that, yes, is more apt to say about him, that Hashem makes things happen directly. He doesn't need to work for any means. Now that's something that's true, that we know about Hashem. But again, all that's telling us is what he does, what we see him doing. It's still not defining for us what he himself is. Now, the truth is that when we say Yud Kei Vav Kei, that's also what it's denoting. Yud Kei Vav Kei still does not tell us anything about Hashem. What does Yud Kei Vav Kei mean? Yud Kei Vav Kei means, on one level, he is, he was, and he always will be, which means he exists. That doesn't tell us anything about him. He exists. That's all. It also tells us he is Mehave Kol Havayis. He is the cause of all existence. There's two levels of Yud Kei Vav, Shem Havayis. He exists, and he causes all existence. He makes it all exist. So in that sense, we say that we do know about Hashem. That he is consciously making things be, making things happen, making things exist. But again, still doesn't tell us who he is and how he works. But that brings us as close as possible to actually relating to Hashem. V'efshu shezeh rotza ba'omroi v'yirayel Avraham el Yitzchok v'el Yaakov v'kel Shaddai. Now, it could be that this is what Hashem meant when he said, Hashem contrasted what he said to Avram, when he told Moshe, there's a difference between the way I appeared to you and the way I appeared to Avram Avinu, Avram Yitzchok and Yaakov. Avram and Yitzchok and Yaakov, I appeared with the name Shakai. To you, I'm appearing with the name Yud Kei Vav Kei. What did Hashem mean to say? What he meant to say is, I'm showing you a higher level of who I am. Meaning what? Meaning we all comprehend to an extent who Hashem is because we see certain things about him. Right? We see, for example, that he's the one who creates people. He shows us something about him, but it still is very far from understanding his essence. So he's saying, that's also what he's expressing when he says, I appear to Avram Yitzchok and Yaakov from Shakai, I appear to you in Yud Kei Vav Kei. What does that mean? Shakai means, it's from the term Meshadu Damarachas, meaning he's almighty. In this world, what did Avram, Yitzchok and Yaakov see? Avram, Yitzchok and Yaakov saw that Hashem can work things out very well. Avram Avinu didn't have children for a long time. Hashem made him have children. Hashem made him beat four mighty kings in war. Right? All kinds of things like that. This showed that Hashem is very mighty, Hashem is very capable. But you know what it didn't show? It still didn't show that Hashem actually is the one who created all the laws of nature. Because with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Hashem was working within the reality of the world. Hashem didn't change the reality of the world. Hashem was working within the reality of the world and making things work out perfectly for them. He made them beat the four kings. He made Avraham have children. But he wasn't showing that I can simply rearrange the way the whole world works. I could stop the world and I could start the world again. So he showed them a limited level. Within the world, I'm very mighty. Right? The greatest doctor can help with fertility. I can actually make you have children. The strongest warrior can beat 100 people in battle. I can beat even 4 armies in battle. So Hashem is showing, I'm very mighty. I'm very capable. But it did not yet show, this is all really just me. Not just that I can make you beat those 4 kings, but that I can just withdraw and the 4 kings will cease to exist. That Hashem didn't show Avraham Avinu. Right? But with Moshe Rabbeinu, he showed something else. With Moshe Rabbeinu, he showed all the laws of nature I innovated. And I can reset them. I can stop them and I can start them again. I can make the whole Bria work differently if I want. And that's what Hashem was showing Moshe. Was a whole different level. For example, by Avram it says, Lo'iniach Adam Lo'ashkom Ayichach Aleim Melachim. Hashem pushed kings aside, right? Hashem showed, I can scare Paroi into not hurting you. Right? I can make sure these people don't hurt you, I can protect you. But Hashem still wasn't showing that actually, I'm the creator of everything. All the forces of nature just work at my commands. They're like Baralem Moifis Kasha Baralem Moisha. But Hashem didn't actually create any new existence. Hashem didn't show himself to Avram as the creator. Hashem showed himself to Avram as a very strong protector. Within the rules of the way things work, I can work things out for you in a very good way. But with Moisha, Hashem showed himself as the creator. H2O makes water. I can show you that I can make H2O turn and make blood. I can rearrange the most basic elements of science the most basic elements of the creation, because these are all rules that I set up. That's what Hashem was showing to Moshe. Therefore he said, I didn't actually show them the Shem Havayah. With Moshe in Mitzrayim, he came and showed all of existence is just because I set down the rules. Up till now, soil is soil. Now, all of a sudden, all of soil is going to be bugs. All of soil is going to be lice. Right? Up till now, H2O was water. Now I'm going to change that. H2O equals blood. Right? Hashem was coming up till now. The sun shines. Now the sun turns off. No more sun. Hashem was showing a completely different level. Hashem was showing, I am the cause of all the laws of nature. Not just that I can operate very well within the laws of nature and manipulate things in the way I want, as he did for Avram. I'm the cause of all the laws of nature. I completely pull the strings. So now, the Asa in Moshe v'Yisrael, so now, it's actually interesting that what's coming out is, that what he's saying is, I'm performing for Moshe and the Jewish people in the Mitzrayim more than I performed for Avram. With Avram, I didn't show him that I'm completely rearranging the laws of nature for him. I didn't do that. Avram Avinu lived in the normal world. His life ran according to the laws of nature. Just, I worked things out well for him. I protected him, I made things work, etc. When the Yidden were in Mitzrayim, I simply tore apart the laws of nature. Why is that? Were they greater than Avraham Avinu? How come for the Jews in Mitzrayim, Hashem completely rearranged nature, undid all the laws of nature, right? And restructured it anew. Well, for Avraham Avinu, he didn't do that. He left the world to run according to its general framework and worked things out well within. See, explain something interesting. In Mitzrayim, Hashem wanted to make a very clear, incontrovertible demonstration that, yes, the one who you're dealing with is the one who created everything, because you see that what I'm doing now is akin to creation of the world. There are all kinds of most basic axiomatic laws of nature. Look, I'm stopping them. No, the sun does not shine every day. No, the soil under your feet is not soil. No, H2O is not water. Hashem was coming and showing things. This can only be the work of the Creator, of the one who actually created these laws. Right? Which was the case with all the Makas in Mitzrayim. Which was the case with Yamsuf. And Hashem simply turned off the laws of nature. Right? Water doesn't stand still. Water drops. Water pours over. No, in this case it didn't. Why? Because Hashem changed the laws of nature. Man. Man, as we saw earlier, was a Briya Yesh Me'ayin. Hashem created out of nothing. They saw things being created out of thin air. Hashem was showing them on a regular basis, I am the creator. The laws of nature are my innovation. Why? Why was he doing this to them and not for Avram? How come for Avram he didn't do any of these amazing things? How come Avram basically lived a natural life? With Hashem showing him different signs of favor. So he says, the Jewish people in Mitzrayim merited to see these very great things, much greater things than Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov saw, not because they're greater than Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. That's not why. Rather, on the contrary. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov reached everywhere they needed to get on their own, through their own efforts. They did not need nature to be rearranged and restructured in order to get them to that proper level of emunah. Hashem created the world. He wants the world to run according to these rules. He doesn't want to change those rules. Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov were able to reach the maximum levels without having any of the rules changed. So Hashem didn't change them. That's their greatness. When it came to Mitzrayim, what Hashem was trying to do here was take a nation of millions, 3 million people, and turn them into Ma'aminim. He couldn't expect now 3 million people to go through the process that Avraham Avinu went through. They were not 3 million Avrahams, right? Many of them were simple people, superficial people at that point. And Hashem wants to turn them into absolute ma'aminim. How is He going to do that? He wanted to come and hit them with something that will impress them, that will impact them in such a way that will turn them into ultimate ma'aminim. So therefore, yes, He came and He completely tore apart nature. He did things in a way that you see that you're dealing with the one who made up all the laws of nature. Like, there was no two ways about it. Anybody who was there was completely bowled over. They saw that all of nature could go back to the drawing board. That's what Hashem showed them there. Whereas the Avos didn't need that. They had reached the ultimate levels of emuna, the ultimate level of understanding. Even if they would have lived an entire life of suffering, their faith would not have been shaken at all. And therefore, on the contrary, Hashem enabled them to reach even greater levels by not showing them these mitzvot, by not showing them these nisim, by allowing them to, from within themselves, develop their emunah to these levels. That they were able to live with the same level of conviction of a person who saw Kriyas Yamsuf, even if they would be in a situation of just suffering. They didn't need all this. We have to note this. This is something amazing. Realize who the Avos were. Right? Avraham Avinu. We're told that he came to Emunah at the age of 3. Now, Midrashim would say all kinds of other things. He came to Emunah at the age of 40. Different ages are recorded in Midrashim. What's the pshat? Obviously, the pshat is that he came to a deeper understanding, more sensory realization. His emunah was developing. His emunah wasn't just, oh, I figured it out, okay, now I know it, next point. No, that point was developing further and further and further throughout his life. It was becoming realer and realer and more sensory, right? But now let's note something amazing. Avraham Avinu suffered for his emunah for many years. He was ridiculed, which, yeah, we know about being thrown into a fiery furnace. But you have to realize that for years, we don't know if perhaps the ridicule that he faced by being the weirdo in society, by being ridiculed by the entire scientific community of the time, everybody normal knew that he was nuts. Perhaps that psychological torture was even worse. And he suffered persecution by Nimrod. He was in a dungeon for 10 years. Not everybody knows that. He was in a dungeon for 10 years. When did he get his first nevuah? When did Hashem first appear to him? It was at approximately the age of 75. For 72 years, and he reached the realization at the age of 3, and started dedicating himself to that. Imagine, he's 23 years old, okay? Let's say he's 30. It's already been years that he is pushing himself for Hashem, and he doesn't get one sign of recognition from Hashem. He's developed these ideas on his own. He never saw Hashem respond. Never saw Hashem respond. And you would think, I'm suffering for Hashem. I've been in a dungeon already for a year. I'm languishing in a dungeon. Let me see some sign. No. Hashem kept behind the curtains. Another year. Why? Because with each added year that went by and Avraham Avinu remained steadfast, Hashem knew, no, Avraham Avinu can push it for another year. For 10 years in the dungeon, he doesn't need me to appear to him. He was growing and growing and growing. Dafka, on the contrary, Dafka because of the fact that Hashem did not appear to him. And Hashem pushed him and pushed him and pushed him. Avraham Avinu was being driven to the maximum, right? No sign at all. Something, right? He's the only person in the world who recognized Hashem. Why doesn't Hashem tap him on the shoulder? 72 years, radio silence. Nothing. Right? At the age of 75, Hashem appeared to him the first time. After he had already thrown himself into a fiery furnace for Hashem, Hashem appeared to him for the first time. What's the pshat? Pshat is the opposite of what happened to the Jews of Mitzrayim. They needed Hashem to appear to them in order for it to work. Hashem said, from Avram I can get higher and higher and higher levels of faith by not appearing to him. He's going to work himself higher and higher and higher. That's what I want. When he reached the ultimate level, Hashem said, that's it. He's reached the peak. Now I'll reward him by appearing to him. Now it's not going to compromise his work if I appear to him. That's it. He's reached the maximum. Now I'll appear to him. Even then, what did Hashem do? What happened then? We think, you know, we see Hashem talking to Avraham all the time. He flies through the parshiyos. Avraham Avinu lived another 100 years after that, right? How many times did Hashem appear to him? We're going to tell you, it's about 10 times. It's not like this was a daily occurrence. It was a very rare occurrence, even after Avraham Avinu started getting nevuah. What happens? Avraham Avinu gets his first nevuah. It's the most an exhilarating experience. What does Hashem tell him? I have a mission for you. Lech lechomei atzucha, leave your land, go to Eretz Canaan. Imagine getting such a personal message from Hashem. You'll be on fire, right? Go to Eretz Canaan, and now you're waiting. Okay, what's next? What's next? Nothing. The lines are closed again. He's here. He's here at Hashem's instructions. What now? Okay, so he continues going about his life as usual. And then the next thing you know, there's a hunger. Hashem, you sent me here. What's the story? Nothing. No communication. Radio silence. Avraham Avinu is forced out of Eretz Yisrael. He goes down to Mitzrayim. How did he get into this situation? Because Hashem told him to come. He dropped everything for Hashem. He's here. Now he's going down to Mitzrayim. Some sign? No, nothing. Hashem is not in touch. Right? Then what happens? Pharaoh takes his wife away. That's not such a drastic story by us because we know that a couple of psukim later he's going to get her back. But for Avraham Avinu at that point it wasn't so simple at all. As far as he was concerned, his wife was gone. He lost his wife. When Pharaoh took women away, they never came back. So, as far as Avraham Avinu was concerned, that was it. He lost his wife. What's he supposed to think now? He came by the direct word of Hashem. And that's it. Now the lines are back off. He's forced out of Eretz Yisrael. He's reached the lowest point he's ever reached in his life. He's down, a foreigner in Mitzrayim by himself. The king took his wife away from him. What's he supposed to think? No, he didn't lose his emunah at all. This is the greatness that Hashem was squeezing out of Avraham Avinu. Later, Hashem gave him Sarah back. Fine. But this is the difference. Yes, Hashem appeared and tore apart all of nation, all of nature, with the Jewish people in Mitzrayim because they needed it in order to be brought to the desired level of emunah. But Avram? No. Hashem put Avram to the grind. He went through his whole life without seeing any of these sorts of things. Because he was able to grow and to reach these levels of emunah without it. They didn't need any of this. Okay? That'll be that for this week. Stopping in mid-sentence as usual, but that's how a Kuzari Shir works.